Welcome to this deep dive. We're about to journey back in time to uncover the captivating story of the Farndale family from Great Ayton. You, our amazing listeners, have sent in some absolutely fascinating excerpts, and frankly, I'm itching to see what we can dig up.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me how these little snippets can give us such a vivid glimpse into not just individual lives, but the evolution of an entire community. This is about so much more than just tracing ancestry. It's like holding a mirror up to social history itself.
I'm already hooked. And we're just getting started. The source material mentions three prominent families, but the Farndales, they're really front and center, aren't they? It sounds like their roots run deep in Great Ayton, like they've been a part of the very fabric of the place for centuries. So where on earth do we even begin to unravel this family tapestry?
Well, the text focuses on two main branches of the Farndale family, both of which first pop up in the historical record way back in the 17th century. But to really grasp their significance, we need to, you know, set the stage a bit. Imagine this, a picturesque village called Great Ayton, nestled in the heart of North Yorkshire, England. This location, it wasn't just a backdrop, it played a vital role shaping the industries and the lives of the people who called it home, including, of course, our Farndale family.
Location, 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 right? It's all connected. Okay, so now we're in the 1650s, and we encounter our first intriguing character, George Farndale. What brought this fella to this charming corner of England?
Ah, George. He's our first puzzle piece. The source material, it's a bit coy about the specifics of his arrival, but there's this one tantalizing clue that hints at his background. Remember that little detail about George inheriting a share in a ship called the James Peacock?
Oh, right, right. I sense a story brewing here.
It's like a breadcrumb trail leading us back to Whitby, which, as you might know, was this bustling port town renowned for its maritime trade back in the day.
So, are we thinking the Farndales were a family of seafarers who eventually decided to trade the open ocean for, well, a quieter life in the countryside?
Not necessarily. See, the text hints at a slightly different, perhaps more nuanced possibility. It suggests they might have actually been involved in shipbuilding itself, maybe even as joiners, you know, those skilled craftsmen who build and repair the wooden framework and interiors of ships. And that, my friend, becomes a recurring motif in the Farndale family saga.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. So we have this intriguing link to shipbuilding, to joinery, possibly even originating in the bustling shipyards of Whitby. Could this be the thread that pulled George to Great Ayton?
Precisely. Think about it. In the 17th century, ships, they were in constant need of building, of repair. It's entirely plausible that George, or perhaps even his ancestors, they recognized a demand for their sought-after skills, for their craftsmanship, and saw an opportunity in a place like Great Ayton.
It's like we're piecing together a historical puzzle, one intriguing detail at a time. We're already uncovering potential motivations, glimpses into how the Farndales might have actually contributed to Great Ayton's development. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's fast forward a couple of centuries to the 1800s. Now, this is where the Farndale family really seems to take root, with Cartwrights and joiners taking center stage. It sounded like they were building a lot more than just ships at this point.
You hit the nail on the head. As we delve into the 19th century, we're met with this incredible period of growth and, you know, transformation. And it's right in the thick of it that we encounter twin brothers, Joseph and Henry Farndale, each embodying one of these prominent trades.
Talk about a family business. But I have a sneaking suspicion their stories go beyond just hammering and sawing. What made these brothers stand out, each in their own right?
Well, their stories are fascinatingly different. Take Joseph, for instance. He wasn't just about constructing carts. This guy was deeply connected to the land, involved in managing woodlands. It highlights just how interconnected these professions were with the resources of their time. Imagine this, owning over 2,000 oak trees, as the source claims he did back in 1851.
2,000 oak trees, that's not just a business, that's an empire. It really gives you a sense of the sheer scale of timber demand back then and speaks volumes about Joseph's entrepreneurial spirit. Honestly, you have to wonder how he managed it all.
He must have been quite the businessman to juggle, you know, the carpentry side of things with this whole timber empire. But what's fascinating is his twin brother, Henry. Henry was involved in agriculture, which you'd think we'd have a lot to say about, but he remains a bit of a mystery. The source material, it just doesn't offer much insight into his life.
Two brothers, linked by blood, but forging their own paths. Classic story, right? Makes you wonder, though, did all the Farndales get swept up in this whole woodworking wave? Or were there other, shall we say, unexpected career choices in the family tree?
Oh, absolutely. While woodworking was, like, the family business, the Farndale family tree had branches reaching out in some pretty surprising directions. For instance, take Joseph's son, John. Now, he decided to follow a different calling altogether. John became a Methodist preacher.
A preacher. Now that's what I call a plot twist. What can you tell us about this unexpected turn? Was it like a sudden epiphany or...
Well, John's story, it actually reflects a much broader trend happening in 19th century England. You see, this was a time when Methodism, with its emphasis on social justice and personal piety, was like exploding in popularity, especially in working class communities, much like Great Ayton. So John's decision, it wasn't just a personal one. It really speaks to the growing influence of this religious movement.
So John wasn't just choosing a career path. He was part of this larger social and spiritual shift. It's incredible how these individual stories can make history feel so tangible, so immediate. Did his story leave a lasting mark?
It did. In fact, our source even includes a snippet from John's obituary published in the Methodist Recorder upon his death in 1862. It reads, and I quote, "John Farndale died at New Shildon, aged 43 years. He was emphatically a man of prayer, not only in his closet, but he regularly conducted family worship, reading his Bible and praying with and for his family."
Sounds like a man deeply devoted to his faith, to his family. A far cry from the sawdust and the sounds of a carpentry workshop, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. And you know, John, he wasn't alone in straying from the family trade. We also meet Thomas Farndale, who, get this, became a broaching machine manufacturer.
From preacher to machine manufacturer, talk about range. But I have to admit, you've piqued my curiosity. What exactly does a broaching machine manufacturer do?
Well, imagine a machine that can shape metal with incredible precision. That's what a broaching machine does. Picture this. A tool with teeth. Each tooth slightly larger than the last, and it just cuts away at the metal, creating whatever shape is needed. Back in the mid-1800s, when Thomas was working, this technology was like cutting edge, literally. These machines, they revolutionized manufacturing. Suddenly, you could mass produce standardized parts, everything from firearms to bicycles to engines.
So Thomas, he was right there on the front lines of industrial innovation. The Farndales, they weren't afraid to embrace new technologies, new opportunities.
Precisely. And they brought that same adaptability to everything they did. For example, the source mentions another Farndale, Richard, who started as, believe it or not, an agricultural laborer, but later transitioned into, you guessed it, cart riding.
There's a real theme emerging here. These weren't just individuals. They were constantly adapting, learning, interacting with their community, seizing new opportunities, navigating a changing world.
You're spot on. And to illustrate this point, the source gives us some pretty concrete examples. Remember William Farndale, the joiner who later dabbled in property? Well, he found himself at the center of a rather peculiar lawsuit.
A lawsuit? Ooh, I do love a good historical drama. What landed him in court?
His dog.
His dog. Was it stolen? Did it, like, bite someone important? What happened?
It was tragically shot and killed.
Oh, no. Poor dog. Who did it?
A young clerk, according to the source. Understandably, William was incredibly upset and decided to take the matter to court. And what's fascinating is that this seemingly small, even, you know, mundane incident, it reveals so much about the social dynamics, about the attitudes of that era.
Okay, you've got my full attention. Spill the tea, did William win his case?
He did. The court ruled in his favor, even awarding him damages and costs. But it's the reasoning behind the decision that I find particularly intriguing. The judge, he emphasized that no one, not even a clerk, had the right to shoot a dog, even if it was considered dangerous unless it was absolutely necessary to protect themselves or others.
Wow, that speaks volumes about how animals, and specifically dogs, were viewed back then. This wasn't just about property, it was about recognizing the inherent worth of a living being. It's a fascinating contrast to how we might approach a case like that today.
Absolutely. This case, as small as it might seem on the surface, it cracks open this whole conversation about evolving social values, the role of animals in society, even class dynamics. I mean, here's this young clerk who clearly underestimated the value placed on a dog, especially by a respected craftsman like William.
It really makes you realize how much we often take for granted about, well, about understanding the past. We're not just talking about a dog. We're talking about a glimpse into a completely different time, a different set of social norms and values.
Exactly. And it's through these personal stories, these seemingly ordinary moments, that we can really connect with people like the Farndales. They become more than just names on a page. We see their joys, their sorrows, their struggles. They become relatable, even across centuries.
It's like we're seeing them come alive right before our ears. And speaking of time passing, the source material, doesn't abandon the Farndales as we move into the 20th century.
Wow.
A whole new era, a whole new world, and I'm sure a whole new set of challenges and changes. It's easy to think about history in these broad strokes, you know. But the Farndale family, they really drive home the point that history, it's ultimately a collection of these very personal, very human stories, all shaped by the wider world around them.
Couldn't have said it better myself. As we move into the 20th century, the world, it was on the verge of such immense change. And the Farndales, well, they weren't immune to it. The First World War in particular, it cast a long shadow, and their stories offer us this really intimate lens through which to kind of view this tumultuous period.
It reminds us that history, it's not just dates in a textbook, right? It was lived, it was breathed by real people, people like the Farndales. Their experiences, they become our own in a way. Were there any stories from this era that really stood out to you?
Oh, there are a few. One that comes to mind is William Appleton Farndale. The source mentions his wartime experiences, and it really paints a picture of, you know, daily life on the front lines. We even get these little glimpses of letters he wrote home, offering a window into the personal toll that the war took, not just on him, but on families, on communities. And then on a lighter note, there's this little tidbit about a fussy Farndale, can you imagine, playing for the local football team. It's a good reminder that even amidst all the chaos and uncertainty, life, even leisure, it went on.
These everyday details, they're so important. It's easy to get caught up in the grand narratives of war, but it was the individuals, the fussy Farndales of the world who lived it, who endured it. Their stories, they remind us of the human cost, the resilience, but also these small acts of normalcy that somehow continued.
Absolutely. And you know, the source, it also reminds us that hardship wasn't confined to the battlefields. Yeah. There's a mention of George Farndale's tragic death, a gas accident of all things.
Oh, that's awful. It's so easy to forget about the everyday dangers that existed back then, risks that we don't even think twice about today. His story is a stark reminder of how precarious life could be.
It really is. But despite these hardships, the Farndales, they persevered. The source wraps up with John Joseph Farndale, Jack, as he was known. It seems he was quite the active member of the community involved in all sorts of events in the 1930s, a true testament to the Farndales' lasting presence in Great Ayton.
From shipbuilding to preaching, from crafting carts to manufacturing machines, from wartime heroes to community leaders, the Farndales really did experience such an incredible spectrum of life, didn't they? Triumphs, tragedies, the whole shebang. It really makes you wonder about all the other untold stories hidden within a place like Great Ayton. What would those buildings, those streets whisper if they could talk? What tales would they tell about the lives lived, about the legacies created by families like the Farndales?
It's an image that lingers, doesn't it? This deep dive, it's been a powerful reminder that history, it's not just a collection of dates and dry facts. It's the tapestry of human lives, all interconnected, all woven together. The Farndale family, with their shipbuilding roots, their entrepreneurial spirit, their enduring presence, they've left an undeniable mark on the story of Great Ayton. And their story, like so many others waiting to be discovered, reminds us of the power of these individual narratives, these glimpses into the past. It's in those intimate details, in the everyday moments, that we truly uncover the richness, the complexity, the beauty of history.